and not directly on the text here. However, I haven't started here. Just about to start.
Yeah.
If we may start on chapter 12, the beginning of chapter 12, as a warming up exercise, Elin, do you want to share with somebody chapter 12? Elin, were you here last week? We got just 2 weeks ago.
Just 2 weeks ago, my father was there.
That's not the answer. I didn't ask whether your car was here. All right. We are dealing with this very young king. Back again, we are back again to the land of Yehuda. Dealing with this young king. It just tells us he began to reign which he ben sheva shonim yahalosh b'molcho. He was 7 years old when he began to reign. Of course, there was the regent. Who was the regent in this particular case? The coach. That is Yehoyadon, who was really his uncle. He was the regent. And he just looked after everything. It becomes very apparent as we read this, but only from the reading, that he was the type of a regent that, however compelling a personality he was, he never projected that personality. He guided the king, but it was the king who made the decisions. And of course, he was the one who was behind it all. He wasn't the power behind it, though. It was just this compelling personality. He was interested only in that the right thing should be done. His own position was that of Kohen, of a priest in the Beis HaMikdash. But the temporal power had to be according to Hashem's word. And he was the one that stood behind the scenes and saw that everything was in order. Bishnas Sheva LeYehu Molech Yahirosh. It was in the 7th year of Yehu that Yahirosh reigned, the Arboim Shono Molech Yerushalayim. And he reigned in Jerusalem for 40 years. The Shein Imo Tzivyo Mibayi Shoma, and the name of his mother was Tzivyo from the Eir Sheva, which means we are led to believe that she was alive at the time of his reign, and the queen's mother, the king's mother, which is not necessarily the queen, thank you very much, which is not necessarily the queen mother, but the king's mother always played an important part, and also very much behind the scenes. And her name is mentioned to us. And then we are told in the next paragraph, Yas Yehoah Shai Yosha Bede Hashem called your mom. Asher Horohu Yehoyodo HaKoreh. And Yehosh did that which was right in the eyes of Hashem all his days, that Yehoyodo the Kohen Horohu, and we spent a little time on that word last year, all the days that he taught him, he guided him, and he directed him. The Chazal say, that's the Torah Shabbat, call Yomov all his days, which it should have been all the days which Yehoyada taught him. It says all his days, which is a little clumsy. And what it means, all his days, all the days of Yehoyada. That is, as long as Yehoyada was all right, everything went well. The trouble started a little bit later when Yehoyada died. But he tells us he did that which was right in the eyes of Hashem. There was only one thing which he didn't do, and that was Rakabomos Losoru Odohomazabhi Humakati Lavomos. He didn't remove the high places. Now there's a difference between the Mizbeach and the Bomo. The Mizbeach was the altar, and the altar was in the Beis HaMikdash. Any words that I use and you don't know, please ask. Even if there's only one person that doesn't know the word, don't hesitate to ask. The Mizbeach, the altar, was in the Beis HaMikdash. The Bomo was a private concern. Each one, if he wanted it, had it, a private Bomo in his home, and it was there that he offered up the sacrifices. Very good. That's the same idea. A raised platform, you see. A raised platform. And of course the theater world has actually taken that word and used it for its own purposes. It uses it for the stage. The bima is the stage in modern Hebrew. You know how bima is the company. The first Hebrew year. The Africa company. So that, yes?
I'm not following something. So in other words, you could actually sacrifice this in your own house.
Yeah. That's exactly what I've got to explain to you. Before there was a Beis HaMikdash, well, first of all, in the wilderness, they had the Mikdash, the Mishkan, which was the sanctuary, and there was a Mizbeach. So nobody performed sacrifices alone. It was only in the Mishkan. When they came to Israel, then they were already scattered. Like this, the Mishkan was in the center, and they were all camped around the Mishkan. As soon as they crossed over to Israel, and they started conquering the country, then Manasseh, Reuben, Gad was on the east bank of the Jordan. Half the tribe of Manasseh went over to the west bank of the Jordan. Then Ephraim took its area in the west bank of the Jordan. The Mishkan was no longer in the center. So each one had his Bomo. He built his Bomo, his own altar, and he sacrificed on it. There's a law in the Torah that when we get the Beis HaMikdash, then sacrifices are to be brought only in the Beis HaMikdash, and the Bomo was then prohibited. Then they could bring only in the Beis HaMikdash. It seemed very, very difficult for a person to give up his own private worship and his own private form of their worship. They didn't want to do it. And the king, in his wisdom or in his weakness, sometimes there's a very thin line of demarcation between the two. And the king, in his wisdom or in his weakness, decided that this is something he wasn't going to touch. So he left it. And that's what it tells us here in this verse. The only thing that he didn't do is he didn't remove these almost, these high places. In verse 4, Rakabomos lo soru odohom, the people did not remove the higher places, mezabchim umakatrim babomos. They sacrificed and they burnt incense on the bomos. Now the burning of the incense was a highly complicated form of worship. Very complicated, with what went into it. So what they did was, now just see the way it says it. It says only, first of all it tells us that Yahushua did write that which was right in the eyes of Hashem all his days. Rakabomas lo soru, old Rohom. The people did not remove the bombers, which suggests that his wish was that they should remove it. It might have been his instruction. If it was a wish and not an instruction, again, difficult to know whether it was his wisdom or his weakness. Vayomer Yahuash el HaKohanim, and Yahuash said to the Kohanim, Kol kesef ha-kodoshim Hashem, yubo beis Hashem, kesef oben ish, kesef nafshos erko, kol kesef Hashem yale alev ish, lohobi beis Hashem. And I explained this to you, and I gave you all the references, if you will remember last week. Mrs. McGilnick, you will excuse us, this is probably, you weren't here last week, you're going to find it a little bit difficult to get into, but only for the next 10 minutes, and then it will be quite different sailing. So he tells them, Kol kesef ha-kodoshim, Asher yubo beis Hashem, any money that is holy money that is brought into the beis hamikdash, and I explained that to you, and till today we do that in our law of tzedakah. If I say I'm giving $100 to tzedakah, give $100 to tzedakah. But if I take out five $20 notes and I put it onto the table and I say, this is $100 for tzedakah, then I'm not permitted to take $20 notes, spend it, and say, it doesn't matter, I've got $100, I'll give them $100, because then these five $20 notes have been designated for tzedakah, and I cannot change it. I must give these. You follow?
Yes.
So that is called kesef ha-kodoshim. So he said, any kesef ha-kodoshim, asher yubo beis Hashem, which is brought into the house of Hashem. Then he says, kesef obeir, I explained to you that was, each one used to give half a shekel to the beis hamikdash. Ish kesef nafshos erko, and then this was, a person said, I'm giving something to the Beis HaMikdash, Erki Olai, my worth. And then it was reckoned out what a person's worth was according to the age of a person. In his most truthful years, most productive years, he was worth more. The same applies to a woman. And this is a form of contribution or donation that a person made to the Beis HaMikdash. Erki Olai, my worth is on me. You remember I gave you the reference where it was in the paragraph. So I don't have to go through that again. And lastly, Kol kesef asher ya'ale alev ish lehobi beis Hashem. And that is a voluntary contribution that anybody out of the goodness of his heart, because of the stirrings of his heart, brings any donation to the Beis HaMikdash. Now, he is setting for himself a task, and this is his first task. He wants the Beis HaMikdash to be in order. The Beis HaMikdash had fallen into neglect. Do you think Ataliah, who ruled for 7 years in Judah, do you think she was worried about the Beis HaMikdash? Couldn't care less about it. It fell into disrepair. It became dilapidated. And Yehoash takes this into his own hands, and he says, I'm dealing with it. Hikulo hemakohanim, ishma eis makoro. Let the priests take, the kohanim take, each man from his acquaintance. Makoro is acquaintance, it's less than a friend. Each kohen has got acquaintances. Let each acquaintance bring to the kohen, to his kohen, and they will strengthen the foundations of the house or the cracks in the house L'chol asher b'motzei shom bedek, wherever they will be found, any crack, then they will take this money and they will use this money in order to repair. So that is really his first task. And we can well understand why he put so much into this first task from various points of view. At its very lowest, it is hakoros hatel. It is an expression of gratitude at its very lowest, saved his life. When his aunt and he ran away with him to save him, she brought him into the Beis HaMikdash. Yehoyada takes him and puts him into the attic above the Kodesh HaKadoshim, above the Holy of Holies. Nobody would ever think of going there. They would be afraid to go into there. That is where she hides him. The Beis HaMikdash saved his life. This is his act of gratitude. Very first step. And then, of course, the important part that the Beis HaMikdash plays and is going to play in his life. But this is the first act that he does. Must have done it. 7 years old. 7 years old. First thing he does. I'm sure that this takes place today in a place like Borough Park. But I remember when I first came to London, and the East End of London was a Jewish ghetto. And you see the children playing in the streets. There was nowhere else for them to play. They were playing in the streets. And it used to be intriguing, as it was gratifying, to listen to the way the children used to speak. And if some child did something, Loshon Hara, mustn't speak it, another child would say, or if a child, they would give a child, he would do something, Kofri Tov, he's ungrateful. And this was rooted into them. And this is the first act that the king does, is an expression of gratitude. Now, that is as far as I'm taking the text today. I just wanted to do this as a warming up exercise so we should remember what it is we are doing. Today, I'm starting to deal with a subject that we must always bear in mind, and we always tackle it from different aspects, from different vantage points. But today, I am beginning to go very deeply into it with you. I'm doing it together with its sources, and I'm giving you the Midrashim. And what I'm doing now, after all, this is a shiur. It's not that I'm giving a lecture to you. It's not that I'm just taking a class. This is a shiur, and in a shiur, you participate, each one participates. I'm doing with you at least three midrashim. And I'm starting off with an easy midrash. And we will take that midrash, and I want you to tell me, what is the purpose of that midrash? What does that midrash really teach? It is a midrash that I spoke about at the Musa Shir that I gave on a Sunday afternoon, some of you might have attended it. But you must analyze it for me and tell me, what is it that the midrash is really saying here? I'll read to you the midrash. It is Rabbi Hoshea that teaches this. I'm doing the Hebrew and the English. The Hebrew I'm doing for the benefit of those who know Hebrew. And as far as those who don't know Hebrew, I would like the ear to become accustomed to the language. At that moment, when Hashem created the first man, Tohu bo malachei hashorish. the ministering malachim made a mistake. Now, I'm using the word malachim and not the word angels, because the word angels, as I've told you before, in English is somehow got quite a different meaning from the word malach. Malach is a being without form, body or substance, which Hashem created. In other words, it is spirit only. And malachim he created, each malach has only one set purpose, and that is all. Now, but the purpose of the malach is to serve. So we say the malachai hashores, the ministering malachim, made a mistake. And they wanted to say before man, as they saw man, and he stood there before him, they wanted to say, Kodesh, holy. This is a holy being. Moshe, and now the Midrash gives an illustration. Lemelech be'ifrechus, to a king and a governor. Shehoyu bikroni, they were in a carriage. Governor and the king and the governor are riding in a carriage, and the crowds are all round about them. The crowds are cheering the king and the governor. Shehoyu bnei hamedina mevakshi lomar lemelech domino. And the crowd wanted to say domino to the king, that means to sing a song of praise to the king. They didn't know which was the king. Was it the president or was it the governor? Both are dressed in three-piece suits. Both have ties. Both have hats. They don't know which is the king. Me also hamerech. What did the king do? Dochfo behotzio chutz mitkrovi. He asked him to go out of the carriage and to. He asked the governor to go out of the carriage and to join the crowds. Then everybody knew that that was the governor. Now they know who is the king, and now they know who is the governor. Kach, so it was. When Hashem created the first man, the ministering malachim made a mistake and wanted to say Kodesh before him. May also according to Baruch Hu, what did Hashem do? He pil olov tardeimo. He caused a deep sleep to fall upon him. The yedu hakol shehu odom, and everybody knew that is a man. He's human. He's not divine. That is the meaning. I'll take it a little bit further in a moment. A very simple midrash. What I want to know from you is, what does this midrash mean to you? A midrash must speak. Can you hear it speaking to you? Does it tell you anything? Don't forget, this is very simple. Don't look for anything sophisticated in it. Take your first impression. What does it do? Yes, they will.
It shows that it's very important to clarify what is God and what is mundane.
Yes, but All right. Keep that in mind. Sue?
That name has potential for being Kadosh, that he, if the Noachim could mistake it, then there's that possibility, and that it's for us to strive towards that.
Well, you see, you are making a sermon out of it. All I want to know is the observation. What does it say to you immediately? You've said it, but you surrounded it by a little too, but too many words, you see. So what does it say? Speaks about the greatness of man. If the Malachi Ashores could have made a mistake, they could have made a mistake, and to say before him Kodosh, that is the expression that they use when they praise Hashem, Kodosh. It shows what man was when he was created. Can't say what man is. It can only tell us what man was when he was created. Don't forget, this is in the first moment of creation. That's all he tells us. What he was at that moment. Is that quite clear? Does anybody want to make any kind of further observation about it? Any questions on it? All right, I'll come to you, Noel.
My question is this observation makes more sense if you hadn't brought in the thing about the king and the government. I don't really know what that has to do with the midrash that deals with the Malachim thinking that Adam was.
Yes. The illustration, it works like this. The Malachim have a relationship with Hashem. This creature of Hashem, which has in this moment been created, stands before them. And they wish to say before it, Kodesh. You are Kodesh. You are holy. It's a term that until now they applied only to Hashem. So, it's the same as the king and the governor, and the people don't know who's the king and who's the governor. So the ministering Malachim don't know. Hashem and this man, they use the same word to describe Hashem as they do the man. Kodosh. Now, Hashem has to clarify that. Point you made. How does he clarify it? Take the illustration. The king, President Reagan, and Mr. Dukeman. Duke Majan. And Mr. Duke Majan are riding in the limousine. People have never seen Reagan before. There is no television. They've never seen Mr. Duke Majan before. Both are riding in the mule. Both are very well dressed. Both are sitting upright. Now, who is Mr. Reagan and who is Mr. Duke Majan?
How did that show the potential?
It's not no potential here. Potential isn't right. We're not dealing with the potential. We're dealing with what is. And they see the president and the governor both they look very fine. Both seem to command positions. The crowds are cheering. Now they would like to sing God Save the President. Have they got something like that here? In England they have. Some kind of thing. And they don't know which is the president and which is the governor. The king senses this and says to the governor, please stop the limousine. Now just joined the procession behind. And now the presently there, everybody knows. So what does Hashem do? He causes man to fall asleep. And I'll read to you the appropriate verse at a moment, and you will see immediately how the Midrash deals with that word. So everybody knew then this isn't Kodesh. So Sue made the point, and that is, it tells us not about the potential of the man. It tells us what the first man was at the moment of creation. So great that the ministering Malachim made a mistake. They thought he had the powers of Hashem. They knew that Hashem created him. But they thought that Hashem had created man to be over them. That they were, he was sort of to be in charge of it all. The governor. Same Kodesh before. And then Hashem causes the sleep to fall down. That is what it says. What I must discuss with you is, how did they make that mistake? Because he looked so well. What made them make that mistake? So did they. So did the ministering to Malachim also. He must have had something that they didn't have. Yes. Yes. I don't think that impressed them too much, you know.
But he had that vision, he also had a physical form, that was the
Well, I think it detracts in everything. The man had something that they didn't have. Right. He had free will. They didn't have free will. Who else has free will? We weren't there yet. Hashem does what he wills. They can't do what they will. They can only do that for which they've been created, and that's all. They cannot do anything else. And young is man, and he can do and not do. He's got free will. Only Hashem has got free will. Say Kodesh. That is where they made their mistake. Now, the Midrash doesn't say that. But a Midrash speaks. And I listen, and that is what the Midrash tells me. Must be that. There must be something that this creature has got that they haven't got. There's only one thing that he has got and they haven't got, and that is predetermination of will, the Chira. Now this is something. He can do, he cannot do. Yes?
I just think it's a small point, but because I remember you were saying about granting permission. Why didn't the Malachim ask one another before they even say Kadosh?
That would have been the next thing, you see.
But they made a mistake. They all agreed.
They all agreed. You know, 20 people can also make a mistake. A whole world can make a mistake. They all agree, and you can't blame them for it. Yah is a creature that has an attribute which Hashem has. And that is, he's got predetermination of will. Yes, no, he can decide. Is he going to do it? No, they can't do that. So this is something in him they wanted to say Kodesh. He's got this great quality in him. Now this is something that I'm trying to make abundantly clear, because somehow it's not understood. Man has got predetermination of will. In that he is independent of Hashem. The implementation of his will is dependent upon Hashem. That he can't do, that is dependent upon Hashem. He can decide, I can decide to open the sefer. It's my decision. But I cannot move and turn it and move the pages that are contrary to Hashem. If Hashem withdraws himself from me, I just cease to be concrete. That I can read this. Anything that I can do, that is as a result of Hashem. So the implementation is Hashem. Is that quite clear? That's not difficult to understand, but it's something that is worthwhile remembering. That this is a modification, really, of predetermination of will. Man can decide, he can determine to do whatever he wants to. But for that, he needs Hashem. Now look how it works out. A man decides to do something wrong. The decision, whose decision is it? His own decision. And he proceeds to implement it. Hashem helps him. So Hashem helps him even to do that which is wrong. That is how far the predetermination of will is that Hashem gave him. But that comes later. How it is that Hashem helps him. But that is what it amounts to. So that is this first midrash. Have you got the idea?
No, because the sense of Hashem as being also a guide, I don't understand where he would help them even to do wrong. Wouldn't there be something that would...
If a person wants to do right, Hashem helps him.
But what if the person is thinking they're doing right, but they're not sure?
If a person is seeking guidance,
right,
then Hashem helps him. But then it is his decision to seek guidance. As the same way as if he does wrong, Hashem gives him the tools for it. If he wants to do right, Hashem gives him the means to it. If he seeks guidance, Hashem provides it. That is the implementation. Hashem provides it. Now you remember the principle that we laid down. Midot Tovo Merubo Minidas Puronius. If Hashem helps a person to do the wrong which he is determined to do, how much more so does Hashem help a person to do the right which he is determined to do? But it must be his decision. Cannot be anybody else's. It must be his decision. And then Hashem helps him. Of course it's going to work out, but I don't want to go into these details, and you can forget them as soon as I mention it to you, because I know that nobody ever forgets anything. So deep down it's always there, it comes to the fore. But you must remember that assuming that a person decides to do the right thing, and he is helped, Hashem helps him, and he does the right thing, and he gets helped more than a person is helped to do the wrong thing. Hashem helps him to do the right thing. Now, when he takes the next step along the right road, then it's not just that he's got predetermination of will. 50% tells him not to do it and 50% tells him to do it. It's already weighted on the side of good. And if a person decides to go the wrong way, as time goes on, it's weighted more and more on the side of going the wrong way. Those are the hazards of life. But it works the other way too. But you don't have to worry about that part of it. That part comes into more detailed discussion. I want you to understand the Midrash. And now I want to explain to you how the Midrash puts it. You'll remember it says, and the Odom lo motzo eizer kenegdo, and for man, God who didn't find a help as his counterpart. And now it says, Vayapel Hashem Elokim Yardemo Avodo. And Hashem caused a deep sleep to fall upon man, Vayishon and he slept, and he took out one of his ribs or the side, and he closed the flesh in its stead, in its place, and Hashem built the rib and that he had taken from the man into a woman, and he brought it to the man. That is his wife. We learn this. Why did he fall asleep?
So that he was hidden?
Oh, you jump ahead of me. How would we learn this normally? Why did he sleep? In order for Hashem to perform the operation. This was the anesthetic. That is the way we do it. Does Hashem really need an anesthetic? And if an anesthetic, couldn't give him a local anesthetic.
Because he really needs to take a rib from Adam and not just create a woman as a female.
Of course. Of course. So the whole idea is different here. First of all, when Hashem created lines, did he create one line and one lioness? Lions and lionesses. When he created elephants, males and females, when he creates man, creates him man. Only one. And then he creates a woman specially for that man and taken from part of that man. Quite a different relationship. And he says, this time it is bones of my bones and flesh of my flesh. It is I. And that is the relationship between man and his woman. Quite different from what it is in animals. But why? What's the sleep necessary? But we learn it. It was the anesthetic. Now the Midrash learns it. And man called names to all the animals and to the fowls of the, and to the beasts of the field. Man called names. And Hashem didn't find a help for him. And he stands all alone. Now all the animals are created, and the ministering Malachim see all this, and they want to say Kodesh, and then Hashem caused a deep sleep to fall upon the man. That's the way the Midrash learns. So the sleep is an effect of Hashem wanting the president putting the governor out of the car, out of the limousine. They think that man is Kodosh, let him fall asleep. Fall asleep, no free determination of will. He's completely without any power. Even you, ministering Malachim, you don't have to fall asleep, you don't sleep. So he's got a disadvantage also. That is the idea of the sleep. And that is the first Midrash. Is that clear? Why is that clear, Marty? Yes, all right, you have to leave that there. Now, it is 10:50. For the next Midrash, I need 3/4 of an hour. May I give you 15 minutes for your break now? Too long, isn't it? I'd like to make it 10 minutes. Let's see if you can manage it in 10 minutes. Just done with you. Now, you see what the way the Midrash does it. The Midrash, you read Pshat. You remember I dealt with what's the difference between Pshat and Drash and so forth. The Pshat is as you understand. And what I can explain it according to the Pshat, that it was important for man that he should see a woman in all her beauty and in all her glory, and not see something taken out of his sides and flesh and Sarachin calls it intusila. You're perfectly entitled. That is the simple, the pshat. That is the pshat, that is the interpretation. Now comes another interpretation. And this is the drash already, from the midrash. Where the midrash says, what it served, the sleep served, as far as the ministering malachim were concerned, they saw immediately. Now there's a verse in Isaiah, which the midrash takes, where Hashem speaks to the ministering malachim, and he says to them, Chidlu lochem min ro'odom, cease for yourselves from this man. Asher neshomo ba'afo, he has in his, we translate it nostrils, not a minute, we translate it, a neshomo, he has a soul in it, ki bame nechshahu. But what is it worth? Yad is asleep. What is it worth for? So much for that midrash. And now we're coming to another midrash. Again, Rabbi Yoshia, and this is what he says. Boro bo arbo brios milamalo the arbo milamalo. When Hashem created the first man, he created him with four characteristics, or better still, attributes, which are from above, which are heavenly. And he created in him four attributes, or four faculties, better, which are earthly, from below. Which are the earthly ones? Ochel v'shoseh ki behemo. He eats and drinks like an animal. Achila v'shoseh, achilo v'shoseh, eating and drinking like an animal. What is the second one? Poro urebo ki behemo. He reproduces. He is fruitful and he multiplies. He reproduces like an animal. Hatolas umatio glorim ki behemo. He excretes like an animal. Umates ki behemo. And he dies like an animal. So these are the four characteristics which he has, which are earthly. And now we want to know which are the four that are heavenly. Omeid kemalake hashores. He stands as the ministering malachim stand. Dibur, he is able medaber kemalake hashores. He speaks like the ministering malachim are able to speak. Da'as, he has intelligence, intellect, deception, like the Malachi Ashore said. And he has written your, he is able to see like the ministering Malachi, and he asks the Gemara immediately, and an animal can't see? Ismael asks the Midrash immediately, an animal doesn't see? An animal doesn't see. But the Midrash says there's a difference between this and the way an animal sees and the way a human being sees. If if, for example, Eli does something, and I'm looking at Betty, and Eli does something, I can see her. But Eileen isn't in front of me, Eileen is there. If you go to the Yellowstone Park and you go up into the backwoods, you meet a grizzly bear, and you are in this line with the grizzly bear, and he hears you making a movement there, what does he do? He turns around like this. We can't see on the side. Only a human being can do that. An animal has got to turn it out. Interesting you should say that. There is one type of animal he can't do to the extent that a human being can do it, but Hashem has helped him that he's got a little bit more than other animals. But we'll come to that. You've got to understand. Now, these are what man has comes from the heavens and earth. He stands, he speaks, he's got his intelligence, he's got an intellect, and he sees.
How does he need free will?
It says like the ministering angels. They haven't got free will. That is, it's from a shell. That is not like them. And that is unique. Have you got the idea? Now, I must tell you that the ones that offer them difficulty are these. What does it mean he stands like the ministry of the person? Pardon? Therefore. What does it mean he stands? What is the standing? What is it worth the standing that he can stand? An animal is down on all fours and he stands on two legs. But what does that mean? And why should a man be able to stand with you? What does it mean? Mary?
Does he want me to do where everything is located? That his head is at the top?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. And it seems like the ministering angels, yes, Deborah? Well, why? And if it has to do with tefillah, why has it got to do with tefillah? Yes. No. Yes, very good. That's very good. Standing before Hashem, very good. Now, what is the standing before Hashem that it should be such a quality? That it's such, yes? Dignity. This little bit of a word that I can work with. Couple. Yes, it's couple. Now I want to show you something. How do we know that the Malachim stand? From the Kedusha. Look what it says when they say Kedusha, when they say, I'm going to read to you the English, let me just give you the appropriate Hebrew. It says, the Asher Meshorosov Kulom, and whose Hashem's ministering Malachim Kulom, all of them, which means each one of them, Odin, stand. The room, Olam, in the heights of the universe. Page 71, Betty, two lines from the bottom of the page. You've got it. Oh no, have you got it? Oh, this is the one. I'm sorry, this is the one. I'm taking away from you. Kulom Odin, they all stand. The room Olam, in the heights of the universe. And reverently proclaiming unison aloud the words of the living God and everlasting King. And what do they say? Kodesh, 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 Hashem Tzedakot, the local words there. But they stand what they say. So what is Amidor that the Midrash says? It's Kavod.
What?
It's respect. That the ministry Malachim have got respect for Hashem. Kavod. That's the sign of standing.
But in the
secular
world, you bow before the King.
You can come to take me
back. So I don't understand why that was the King.
When I come into this room, I have noticed that everybody stands. Why?
Because the King is already there.
That is the first respect that he shows. First respect is to stand. Down is another, down is obeisance, which is another thing. But this is respect. And that is what the human being has got. The animal hasn't got it. And what does the secular world say it's changing now. What does the secular world say? Why should you respect your neighbor? Why? What's he different from you? Why should you respect your parents? What do you owe them? You don't owe them anything. All people are the same. Why should you respect your teachers? What do you owe them? You remember that? Or don't you even remember it? No, you don't have to respect anybody. There is no respect. The other is unbearable. It is people about people I shall speak a lot to you about people is. Only the human being can speak. Only the human being can communicate in language. If you know what language is, you go to a primitive people and they've got language. And the language has got grammar. There are conjugations, there are declensions. There are eight parts of speech. And each language has got these eight parts of speech, primitive languages. That is what the human being has got, people. And he is able to translate his thoughts into deep booming to speech exactly and to convey it to another. And with it goes the color in speech, the inflection of the voice. That is God from him, Malachi Hashem. He's got Dharmas. He's got intelligence. He's got intellect. An animal might have intelligence too. He hasn't got an intellect. Is there anything beyond intellect that a human being has come? What's about perception? Now, perception is, that's right, but it doesn't fall into this. But so Da'as includes perception also. A person can be intelligent, and a person can be intellectual, but not perceptive. Quite right, imagination all comes into it, creativity all comes into it, innovation all comes into it. That is Da'as. And finally, we can see. What is we can see? What is so great about it? And can the ministering Malachim see? They have no body. It is perspective. It's perspective is something quite different. Perspective to sight what did I say was the quality of Das, intelligence, intellect and
perception.
Perspective to sight is what perception is to intelligence. You see, if I see you at the sheep, I see you at the sheep, what is my perception? You've got a baby at home, you've got a husband at home who's looking after the baby, that your thoughts are not only at the sheep, your thoughts are with the baby, you've got this one. But I see it when I look at you. Is that intelligence? Is that intellect? Or is that perception?
So it's like putting things together?
Yeah, I just like putting things together. I'll explain it a little better in a moment. But I just want to give you some idea. Now, before we go any further, is that right? Is there anything you want to ask about that? Now that is what the Midrash tells us. Now, you can ask me a question. You can say to me, because the Midrash doesn't speak about this, I am taking you now into the workshop. We're in the workshop now. Where we're putting everything together. You can say to me, is it just by chance four on each side? What's this? Tom, where does the Midrash get all this? Would you like to know, or aren't you interested in asking that question? You want to know, all right? If you want to know, I'll tell you. Excuse me. It says, Hashem made man. The very first time, just let us examine the words. And Hashem said, now, in the making of man, there is asi, bi'riah, and asiyah. There's creation and making. Now, count up on your fingers. I'll just read to you the appropriate verse. And Hashem said, let us make man in our image and after our likeness. Make. Will you count up? One. And let him have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the heaven, and over the cattle and over all the earth, and over everything that moves and that creeps upon the earth. And God created the man, two, it is make, God created the man, in his image, in the likeness of God, boro, and so he created them. He created him. How many times? Oh, pardon? And one man. So it's Betzelem Elohim Boro, and so he created him in the image of God. Zohor Nekevo Boro, and so male and female again Boro, he created them. How many? Let us make man in our image. And Hashem created the man in his image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. God, you get it. just count it up. And Hashem said, let us make man in our image. Yes. Did anybody have any difficulty with that? Four. Those are these four. Those four. Those are the four. He created the attribute of amido, the attribute of speech, the attribute of intelligence, intellect, and perception. He created in him re'io, which is, we said, it is perspectivity. Those are the four. It doesn't matter the order. It doesn't matter the order for the time being, because with the order I've got to discuss something else with you. Now, it speaks again about man, and it says, I think this is the place, this is the book of the generations of man, and this is the fifth chapter. What I read to you was from the first chapter of Bereshit. This is the fifth chapter. On the day of the Roe Elohim Odom, of the God's creating man, count it up please, one. And he made him in his image. Zohor unekevo bro'om. His male and female, he created them. How many have you got? Three. And he blessed them. And he called their name man, on the day he bore on of his creating them. Oh, that is those four. And that is the way the Midrash works. Now, in the Midrash, it doesn't tell you this. But when you learn how to handle a Midrash, these are the things that you look out for. So we've got four. These four. Now let us go further in the Midrash and see what the Midrash does with all this. Now look what the Midrash does. The Midrash goes on and says as follows. Now the next person that is mentioned in the Midrash, Antrovet Rabbi Hoshea, now comes a person with a name that you've probably never heard of. Rabbi Tifdoi, the Shem Rabbi Achol. Now this is Rabbi Tifdoi says, Ho el yonim nivrehu betzelim uvidmus. Those that come from above were created betzelim uvidmus, in the image and the likeness, that means in the image and the likeness of Hashem. The Einom Porim the Rovim, and they don't reproduce. The Tachtoni, and the other four on the right hand side, Porim the Rovim, they are fruitful and they multiply. And they are not created in the image and in the likeness. What is Rabbi Tifdoi trying to tell us? Well, I just want to get the others also to say something. Tamar, are you with us?
Yes.
What do you think Rabbi Tifdoi is giving to tell us? He says, these four were created in the image and in the likeness. And there is no reproductivity here. Here there is reproductivity, and there is no image and likeness. What is he saying? Yes, no doubt.
The Shem has a hand in everyone, individual, without individual characteristics. It's not that they...
And in these, he hasn't got a hand in
No, that's just something which is, that is because it's a biological, that's a biological...
All right. Ross?
What about this man's responsibility to...
No, I think it's something very simple. What he's saying is, now, how do we characterize this? Just an overall description. Characterize it by Selim and the Moose. All this, Amido, the image of Hashem, was thinking. A man knows how to show covert evil, God, and evil. This all is, if you want an overall term, it's Selim Udemus. If you want an overall term for these four characteristics, it says it's Ferei Urvei, it's under reproductivity. Now why? What has death got to do with reproductivity?
More than that.
Now, here is what eating and drinking, what's that got to do with reproductivity? I'm going to ask you something else. If I were to ask you to take these four and to dissect them, it's one piece. To dissect them into two, how would you dissect them? Yes?
The eating and the sleeping together and the reproduction and the death together.
I don't think I would put it that way. I think I would put it the eating and the drinking and those two together, these two together. Yeah, I'm going to ask you something. Reproductivity. Speaking about the world at large. when a man and a woman have children, do they think of reproductivity, or just they want to have children? I was thinking about the ordinary person, the millions upon millions of people. They just want to have children. In order to have children, you know, I know that my son quoted at the bottom to you and he dealt with it. I don't know how many of you heard the shiur that he gave, but he told me about it. There is a Gemara that says, you know, once there was a driving force, and when I use that word driving force, I'm letting you into a secret with you. There was a driving force towards idolatry. To such an extent that the Gemara says that Menashe HaMelech, whom we haven't met yet, but we're going to meet him soon, his evil, the evil that he did, and the idolatrous practices that he had, and the idols that he worshipped. And he was a man with tremendous knowledge of Torah. And one day, hundreds of years afterwards, in the school, they were discussing Menashe. And one of them said, our colleague Menashe, that's King Menashe, one of the great scholars said, our colleague Menashe did that and that. And in the night he appeared to this person in the dream. And he said to him, I'm your colleague. Tell me, what is the law in this and this circumstance? And in his sleep the man said, I don't know. He said, you don't know, and you call me your colleague. You have no right to call me your colleague if you don't know. So in his sleep he says to Menashe, tell me the answer to the question, and I will repeat it in the academy in your name. And he tells him the answer to it. And the next day he goes into it and he says, our master, not our colleagues, our master Menashe asked this question, and this is the answer to it. Now you can imagine what the early out that he asked him. Before he woke up, he said to him, since you have such depth of understanding of the Torah and of learning, how comes that you served idols? Said Menashe to him, if you would have been there, and your imp would have been there, you would have lifted up your skirts and run to serve idols, so that you shouldn't stumble on the way. Now, I had a very strange experience a few weeks ago, which helped me to understand. Now, look at the driving force towards idolatry. The Gemara says that the great ones of an age that was after the destruction of the first base of Israel, the great ones of the age prayed to Hashem that he should remove this irresistible urge to serve others. Hashem removed. So we haven't got the urge to serve others. We don't worry about the others. I haven't got to exercise my free determination of will not to serve an idol. Has no attraction for me, nor I'm sure for any of you. They arose and they asked Hashem to do away with this urge, to take it away from man, this urge to serve idols. Hashem. Now that's one obstacle out of the way. They had another idea. They said, man's got such passions. Men and women are so drawn to one another. They pray to Hashem, do away with that passion. Simple, fine. Do away with that passion. The next day, somebody was ill, they wanted a fresh egg. No fresh egg in the whole world. Not a fresh egg in the whole world. So they prayed, they didn't come back. They realized they couldn't do it. Let it come back. What is the driving force in the physical nature of man? The driving force is survival. How does the human race survive? By reproducing itself. But the driving force is to survive. Why did the person eat and drink? In order to survive. These are things that don't depend on human beings. They come of themselves. This he's got to do, he's got to eat and drink, and he's got to do, he's got to reproduce himself. It is pray or obey. If you want a descriptive word of what this is, what is the driving force? The driving force is survival. What is the driving force here? The driving force here is godliness. It's serendipitous. The driving force is godliness. And that is what he does. Puts it into these two categories. Is that clear? Now let us take it further. Omar HaKodesh Baruch Hu. If I were to have created man only from the only with this, then he died, he lives and he will never die. If only from this, he dies and he never lives, even when he's alive, he's dead, as far as this is concerned. So Hashem says, I will create that. Then it goes on, it says, Uredu didgasayob. We translate it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the heaven and over the heaven. You have dominion. The word redu either comes from this ray down as well. Redu. Either it comes from Rage Dalet Aid or Youth Rage Dalet. This word means to rule over, really have dominion over. This word means to go down. Says the Midrash. So this is Redu in. In this form, it is second person imperative. It can mean rule and have dominion. It can also mean go down. He said, if you conduct yourselves according to this, and your urge is godliness, you have dominion. You rule over everything. If on the other hand you choose that to the exclusion of this, then do go down. Go down to the level of the beast of the field, of the fish of the sea. Go down to that level. Have you got that clear? Now you see how far this, how far all this goes. But we are by no means finished. Now you can sit back for a little, and I can just say a few words. It's almost 100 years now. In the science of biology, and in all science, may the simple aspect of it fit in. When you are dealing with organic things as opposed to chemotherapy, and that is seen in inorganic sciences, it's also there, but it prevails in the organic sciences. In the organic sciences, one has what the scientists do, they dissect that which they have. They'll take the body and they will dissect it. And in their dissection, they reduce it. They reduce it to molecules, and they find out what the body, what constitutes the body, and they can tell you so much percentage of it is hydrogen, so much percentage is oxygen, so much is carbon, so much is the lime, so much is sulfur. Tell you exactly what it all is. And that school is called the school of reductionism, or the school of mechanics. Now, there are other scientists, they are very few in number, who say that is absolutely in order, provided we don't lose sight of one thing, and that is that there is something about the whole. They call them vitalists. These are people who see in the body and there's some integration of all its parts. You can take a body, you can dissect it, you can reduce it to its molecules. Now go and put it back in there. Go and put it back in there. With life. That is something that we hold to. Now, I want you to take it on a higher level. We are taking the human being, but we are taking the human being with the forces that he has got, with the energies that he has got, with all these faculties. And according to the medicine, that is terrible. They fall into those two parts. All these faculties fall under those two, or under those two headings. It depends upon man whether he is able to be whole or he's not able. If he's whole, it's reduced. He has to live. If he's not whole, he comes down to the level of the life. When the first man was created, and the Malachim saw him and wanted to say for them, this is all they saw. That's all they saw. Plus, he had seen the making of them. In that he was not like them, in that he was like them. They wanted to save Kodesh. This they didn't see at all. Because when God created the first man, this was potential, and this was actually, this is what we are. This is what they saw, and this was only potential. Then he sinned, and this became actual. Until then, that wasn't there at all. Now, I'm by no means finished with the subject. You can ask me a very pertinent question, and I shall not regard it as impertinent. Yes?
How did the first thing that
it's
death, it makes them, it would make them Adam. Was it spiritual thing? Was it physical thing? You think that they didn't
well, it wasn't through reproduction. Hashem, man had a body when he was created. It's true.
They didn't eat them.
Oh, now that is, you see, that is the question.
If they didn't eat them,
that is the question. That is the question. Didn't eat them. Now, I can only touch on this. I want you to be able to digest on it because I've got to tell you a lot, lot more about this. I want to tell you something else. We know already, this we can understand. We take people like ourselves. We've got our ego. We know what it is. It is deep. We've got doubts. It is deep of the perception. We've got the ego. All these things we've got. And we've got this. It's the ratio which concerns us. That is what concerns us. But you've got these are all things that we've got. And these things belong to self-awareness, and this belongs to self. Now, some of you might have heard a share that I gave on a Sunday afternoon, in which I spoke about body and soul, and form and conflict. And the burden of the share was that everything, whether it's organic or inorganic, has got a self. The only trouble is this, that it's in different things, it is a different thing. For example, we know we've got a body and we've got a soul. An animal, if it didn't have a soul, it couldn't live. The only thing is the Midrash says that there are five words for soul. There's nefesh, ruach, neshama, yechid, or chayim. Only man has got neshama. Only man has got to show. But an animal, the mere fact that it can move. And why does an animal move? Only because of self-preservation. And what is self-preservation? It's survival. That's an animal. Spend a day and watch an animal. Watch a cow or a horse in the field. It moves to find food. It will move in order to find a female. It will move for that. It's all self-preservation. It's all survival. It's all, that's an animal. That is a driving force in an animal. What is the driving force in a human being? Can be godliness. That's the driving force in everything. Freud doesn't say so, because of what type of human being he is. Of course he doesn't say so. So the other thing is the driving force. Now I am a very privileged, because I have actually lived with him. His driving force was the celebrity. That was their driving force. Everything they did, that was their driving force. Yes. What did they do? Even when we eat food, a still has got a body and a soul. It's got outward form, and it's got content, and the content is itself. What is it in a piece of bread? It's made up of particles. That's all it's made of. But what is that power that keeps them together and causes the particles not to disintegrate? That power is itself. At its very lowest, anything we eat has got something spiritual about it, otherwise it can't exist. Today we understand it very much better. And we know already so much about the atom. that there's hardly any matter in an atom. The matter is negligible, it's all energy. And what is energy? Not something that you can see or feel. In the food that we eat, there is something in the food that is spiritual also, and that sustains the spiritual in us. That sustains the spiritual in us. So when the first man ate one thing, it was quite different. And all these things, quite different, quite different. But that is something that I'm still going to discuss with you. And we've got to have still a better understanding of that. Now, the basis of it is, and this is how far we've got, what is the driving force?